18th, 2013. This is the Hermetic Hour. I'm your host, Folk Runyon, and tonight we present a discussion on the Kabbalistic sphere of Malkuth and its significance in Hermetic magic. Now, this will be the first of a series of lectures starting at the bottom of the Tree of Life and working upwards following the path of the Serpent of Wisdom. And these lectures will actually be lessons in the Associate Member Program, which we will later collect in one package, and they will be interspersed, of course, with current topics, such as significant new books, important guest interviews, and such. But you can expect at least one or two Ortschheim lectures per month. Now, Malkuth is not just the physical world of Ashiya below the Zoroastrial. It is a most important magical, mystical realm in which significant visions are received, especially the Holy Guardian Angel. Now, this operation is done entirely in the sphere of Malkuth. You should recall that each sphere on the tree contains an entire tree within itself. Now, our texts for this lecture will be Dion Fortune's Mystical Kabbalah and Gareth Knight's A Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism. So, as we said in the abstract, tune in and start the long climb upward. So, Malkuth. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with Kabbalah, I suggest that you listen through this show and pick up as much as you can. And then, after you have done that, and go to our Book of Solomon's Magic, which if you don't have, you should bring in, and go to page 56, and we have a chapter called The Kabbalah of Wizardry. And that chapter, we try to present magical Kabbalah or Hermetic Kabbalah in as simple and as direct and as usable, practical, a treatise on it that we possibly can do in one short chapter. So you want to review that and then come back and listen to this lecture again, and you will probably be able to understand it a little better. Now, going to that same chapter that I'm talking about here, I'm going to read you a little bit so you just get just an idea before we get into the Malkuth thing. Now, let's take a look at what I call the Kabbalah of Wizardry. It was developed in the late Middle Ages and early Renaissance by nominally Christian magicians and is usually referred to as the Hermetic Kabbalah. Now, how does it differ from Rabbinical Kabbalah? And just how pagan or how Gnostic or how Judeo-Christian is it? Now, these questions may not seem important at the beginning, but they will loom large as you begin a serious study of the subject. So I'll do my best to answer them as briefly and simply as I can right at the outset of your training experience. Now, let's begin by attempting a one-sentence definition of Kabbalah. Kabbalah is a philosophical, mathematical, geometric system that describes the creation and operation of the universe through four dimensions by employing a schematic design containing 10 spheres of descending emanation connected by 22 paths attributed to letters of the alphabet and their numerical equivalents. Oh boy. So, that's a one-sentence definition. Now, this is a starting point, but not much better than giving the weight, height, and color as the definition for an elephant. essential to understanding the Kabbalah is the concept of the Ein Sof, the limitless nothing. It contracts itself and produces the Ein Sof Aur, the limitless light, which then expands to produce the universe and continues to enliven and to ensoul it. And this conception predates modern physics and the Big Bang Theory by 1,000 years. And it also puts Kabbalistic philosophy in a very controversial position in relation to Orthodox Jewish and Christian religion. At the highest level the Kabbalist can conceive, God is not judgmental or in any way dissatisfied with his creation. He simply is, and he continues to be. A contemporary popular analogy would be the Force in the Lucas Star Wars films. Use the Force, Luke. The universe is therefore operated by lesser, more differentiated personifications, such as angels, gods, goddesses, and elemental spirits. Now, this idea was originally Neoplatonic, the philosophical high water mark of classical paganism, and can be explored further in the writings of the philosopher Plotinus and his followers. I might mention here that Hermetic philosophy is a combination of Neoplatonic philosophy and Gnostic theology. If you want to get a quick definition of the Hermetic position, that's it. Now, we attribute all of these lesser powers to the various spheres and paths of the tree of life structure described in our one-sentence definition. And we can then access them for knowledge or for help. Now, thinking of it in a more subjective way, we might say that Kabbalah is a spiritual magical computer program for your mind. It interfaces the left and the right hemispheres of the brain to modern psychological reality, originally theorized by the Kabbalist Isaac Luria in the 16th century. And it allows you to go online with the great mainframe. In other words, the microcosm you accesses the macrocosm God. Now, since its emergence in medieval southern France and Spain to the present era, Kabbalah, especially magical Kabbalah, has been studied and practiced by just as many Gentiles as Jews. In the 15th century Europe, a philosophical marriage took place that established the lineage of the Western esoteric tradition. Hebrew Kabbalah was united with classical paganism, Hermeticism, Hermetic philosophy, had arisen in the second century of the Christian era as an attempt to preserve the ancient wisdom from the anti-intellectual onslaught of Christian zealots. It combined elements of Neoplatonic, Gnostic, and Orphic teachings. And when the Hermetic writings were rediscovered by the Renaissance Europeans, magic was literally reborn. And Hebrew Kabbalah, which shared many of the same original roots, was soon integrated into the Hermetic scheme to give it necessary structure. Humanist Hermetic philosophers enriched their magical art by including the pagan Orphic hymns to the gods and drawing on the exotic Arabian Sabaean planetary magical system having origins in ancient Canaan and Babylon to create an elegant synthesis. The earth was declared a goddess, the Anima Mundi, and the deified sun, moon, and planets were evoked both in the human body and in the heavens beyond. And this obviously pagan, capricious, and amoral pantheon was balanced and regulated by the angelic counterparts retained from the biblical system. And however, in the Hermetic Kabbalah, these angels were thought of as the sentient messengers or special power givers, not of a biblical Jehovah, but of an omnipresent, omnipotent, and non-judgmental force that flowed through the universe. The famous Renaissance philosopher, magician Giordano Bruno, who was supposedly burned at the stake for supporting Copernicus's heliocentric theory, was actually executed by the Inquisition, not because he publicly declared that, yes, the earth does revolve around the sun, but because he then insisted that the sun is a god. Now, Kabbalah, in its earliest form, was probably derived from a synthesis of Pythagorean mathematical geometric philosophy and Simonian or Samaritan Gnosticism in the first century. And in Alexandria and in Palestine, its Palestinian roots were shrouded in myth, but we can make an argument for a pagan Samaritan aspect to it. But then again, it really got put together in Alexandria. There was a very, very large Jewish quarter in ancient Alexandria where the Kabbalah probably really did get formed. In its later Hermetic forms, the practical magical Kabbalah is similar to Tibetan Tantric Buddhism in that elaborate visualizations of frankly pagan god forms, angels, and elemental spirits are encouraged. Judaic and Muslim religious tradition forbids this imagery, thus severely handicapping their forms of Kabbalah in a magical sense. There is, however, one major difference between our Hermetic system and that of the Tantrics. They contend that everything is ultimately illusion, where we say that everything is ultimately reality. And for this reason, we place great emphasis on developing and balancing the four philosophical elements, fire, air, water, and earth, animated by the force which we call spirit. Now, in Hermetic Kabbalistic terms, these four elements are the manifestation of the Tetragrammaton, the fourfold name of God, and they are further personified by the four archangels of the quarters with which you are already familiar. Now, the importance of these four magical elements, which are the Grail Hallows and the Tarot Suits, cannot be overemphasized. And I need not press my argument further than to refer a student to one of our major beginning texts, Initiation into Hermetics by Franz Pardon. This entire work is devoted to the mastery of these four principles. Now, at this point, I'm going to leave the Book of Solomon's magic, and we're going to start into the lowest of the spheres on the Tree of Life. And the lowest of the spheres is Malkuth, and it's in a single dimension called Ashiya. And this single dimension is the physical universe. And above that, of course, we have Yetzirah, which is the astral. And then above that, we have Bria, which is a kind of a creative dimension above the astral. And we sort of think of that as a two-stroke engine, a yin-yang sort of an affair. And above that, we have the single dimension with that original light, that original Big Bang, the original origin of the Force, and that is the dimension of Atzeluth, and that is where Kether, that wonderful light at the beginning of the universe occurs, which then in turn comes down through our spheres, following what we call the lightning flash or a flaming sword, all the way down to Malkuth. Now that you got some kind of an idea of what this schematic looks like. And believe me now, this is a schematic. Please don't think that the universe, we're trying to tell you that the universe looks like a big pinball machine. No. Although I remember there was one of Crowley's followers who perhaps indulged a little bit too much in something, and he really did. He looked up and he actually saw this great pinball machine in the sky rising up and up and up and up and up. So, but no, this is a schematic. It's like a computer program. It's a schematic. It's a filing system. It is not to be taken, well, you can work it literally, but don't take it literally. That's what I'm trying to point out. Now, down at the bottom dimension, physical dimension, That's Ashiya, and in there is this one sphere, Malkuth, and that's the physical universe. Now, up in the Briatic dimension, right below Kether, we have Chokmah and Bina. Now, Bina, we attribute that to Saturn, just putting the planets off on the tree, but Bina, and this is important to realize here, Minai is considered to be Kabbalistically called Saturn, and Saturn is considered to be the origin or the beginning of the physical universe, begins in Saturn. And I say, well, something, Brian, now you're talking masters, now you're saying it begins in Saturn. Well, just trust me. I mean, you could do, Kabbalah is like statistics. You can prove anything with statistics, you can prove anything with Kabbalah. But we have a diagram, which is in some ways almost as important as the Tree of Life diagram, called the Cube of Space. And the Cube of Space is a cube that represents the whole universe. And what we do with this is we have this cube, and we put all the different spheres and paths and letters and everything, and we fractalize the cube, and then we put these various letters of the Hebrew or Phoenician alphabet on the junction points of wherever we want them to it. So we have another one of these schematics which we can use to describe the universe. Now, the important thing about that relating to Binah is that Saturn is right smack in the center of the cube. And we bring down the three mother letters from the supernal Tether and Briad. We bring them down, Aleph, Mem, and Shin. And we bring those down right through Binah in the center. And that's the beginning of the physical universe. Okay? Now, this is very important because Malkuth and Binah have a relationship. And you, as you get into the advanced aspect of this, you find that there is a tree supposedly before the fall, and then there is a tree after the fall. The 10-sphere tree is after the fall. The 11-sphere tree is before the fall. And Binah, right there in the center of the cube of space, where the physical universe starts. And why does it start there? Well, because Saturn was the furthest out planet they could see. It must have started out there because that's as far out as we can see. So that's where they started it. Now, supposedly, Binah, when we had this so-called biblical fall, Binah falls all the way down to Malkuth. Now, it leaves a hole in the middle of the Tree of Life we call Da'at, which is the hypothetical sphere, and it falls all the way down to Malkuth. Now, Malkuth is described in the traditional rabbinical Kabbalah. Malkuth is described as the shining supernal kingdom elevated even above Binah, which is way, way up there, right under Kether, right under God. And okay, what's going on here? What is going on here? If this is the physical universe down here, and the sphere of the elements, and this is supposed to be the dirty old earth we're standing on, then why is it elevated above Binah? Why is it mystical and holy? This is a mind-blowing concept. And this is one of the things I think about the Kabbalah that makes Orthodox rabbis and fundamental preachers and doctrinaire priests and all rather uncomfortable. Because what they're saying here is, and this is very important to our discussion, what they're saying here is that the physical universe is holy and ensouled and magical. Yeah. Wake up and smell the coffee. Take a look around. Nature is beautiful. Nature is holy. Nature is magical. Oh, boy, what a concept. And it's actually a Kabbalistic concept. Yeah, immediately you're saying, wait a minute, that's a pagan concept. This is, you're talking paganism. Oh, yeah, aren't we, though? But it's the truth. That Malkuth, that the physical universe is in this sense elevated above Binah, the beginning of the physical universe of Umbria. This is why we find that now again this gets a little bit of a wrinkled technical kind of a thing here, but we have 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. And unfortunately, when we switched over to the Phoenician, we corrected that and added a couple more because You really need 24 letters to fill out the cubit space and to fill out the zodiac and actually do the Kabbalah the way it was originally intended. You need a 24-letter alphabet. They only had 22. So in order to get this to work, what they did was they combined Saturn and the Earth. Because he didn't have a letter for the Earth. He only had the left mem machine. They had three, air, water, and fire. That's all they had. So they needed a letter for Earth. So they said, we don't have one. So, okay, we'll say Saturn. We'll use Tau. We'll use that for the Earth because that's where the physical universe starts. So that's why we have a relationship from that 30-second path leading up from Malkuth up to Yasala. That's why Saturn is attributed there, and that's just why the Tau is there and whatever. Yeah, it's a mystery. But it's more of this idea of Malkuth in Eshia actually being more exalted than Saturn and Bina and Bria. It's more of that. And for more effective magical purposes, we added Omega after Tau to the Phoenician alphabet, which we would like to call the Neo-Atlantean Phoenician alphabet, if you want. Yeah, well, you know, it's just a nice mythological reference. And so Omega is the seed letter down there of the Earth. It should be, because Omega is the combination of everything. Now, Malkuth, a very, very magical sphere, and the Earth is magical, and nature is magical. And what this is telling you, this philosophy here, is telling you, hey, go out there and take a look at nature, and realize that this is a holy thing. This is a holy sphere. This is very, very magical. The world is magical. The universe is magical. And so you don't need to shut yourself away in a dark room and go on up to these higher spheres and the astral and the briatic world and all of that. You don't need to do that. If you wanted to, you could bring that world down to Malkuth. Now, this is very important because a large percentage of important magical operations are actually done in Malkuth. Remember now, of course, every sphere, including Malkuth, has a tree inside it. Has every sphere is in the tree, and so you can have. Yasod of Malkuth, and you can have Hod of Malkuth, and you can have Tiphereth of Malkuth, and you can have Kether of Malkuth. Remember we said in Ron Duquette delivered from the top of Mount Shasta when he played Hermes Trismegistus, and he said that you have, when you climb a holy mountain, you're in the Kabbalistic terms, you're attaining to Kether of Malkuth, because the mountain is reaching up. This natural mountain reaching up into the heavens, and of course, the California Indians believe that the souls of the dead went on up the top of Mount Shasta, and then went from the top of Mount Shasta up into the Milky Way, which is of course universally mythologically known as the River of Souls. So, also, the Holy Guardian Angel retreat, the whole Holy Guardian Angel operation is done in Malkuth. Now that should indicate that your concept of Malkuth is very, very magical. And now, what constitutes the magical aspect of Malkuth? Well, first, it's made up of the four elements. And the four elements, as we have said over and over and over again, those four elements, they are the structure of astrology. Astrology is structured on these four elements. And astrology, of course, is very, very important to the Hermetic tradition and magic and Kabbalah. Don't ever let any rabbi tell you that Kabbalah doesn't emphasize planets and astrology? It does. The Zohar is loaded with astrology, and it's loaded with planetary references. So what I want to point out to you is that the sphere of the elements is also the sphere of the elementals. No, the gnomes, the salamanders, the sylphs, the undines, and these wonderful earth spirits, water spirits, the air spirits, the fire spirits, this is all in the realm of Malkuth. Now, as I said, to make this a little clearer to you, if you look at the attributes of Malkuth, let me just get into Dion Fortune's classical book here, The Magical Kabbalah. Oh, no, The Mystical Kabbalah. Dion Fortune, by the way, was a Golden Dawn initiate and adept. And she wrote this very, very wonderful book, The Mystical Kabbalah, which I very strongly recommend. And this book only deals with the spheres. It doesn't deal with the paths. Now, the reason why she didn't deal with the paths was, at the time she wrote the book, the path attributes and the path correspondences were considered secret. And she demurred on that. And so she wrote this wonderful book on the spheres, but you can say in a sense that it's incomplete because it doesn't deal with the symbolism of the paths. Now, for that, you have to go to, you should go to either Rigardi's Garden of Pomegranates, which is very, very good, or the one we're using tonight, and the one I think is very, very important, by Basil Wilby, who wrote under the name of Gareth Knight. And he was a student of Dion Fortune's, and he carried on with her work in the Society of Inner Light. And Basil did a very wonderful book, and I think it's back in print now. It's a two-volume set called A Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism. And by the way, the Hermetic Kabbalah, the Rabbinical Kabbalah, I think they pronounce it Kabbalah, is K-A-B-B-A-L-A-H. The Hermetic Kabbalah is usually spelled Q-A-B-A-L-A, Kabbalah, Q-Bala. And the Christian Kabbalah sometimes is really C-A-B-A-L-A, but I don't know what it is. The Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism, Volume 1, Gareth Knight. And Volume 1 in Gareth Knight deals with the spheres, and Volume 2 deals with the paths. Now, Gareth Knight is not just a follower. He isn't just following along and doing a Me Too thing on Dion Fortune. Basil's an adept in his own right. I mean, he amplifies. He really, in his section here on Malkuth, he really amplifies Dion Fortune's work and discusses a great deal more about death. To some extent from Swedenborg, and to some extent from Dion Fortune's most remarkable work, a channel work called The Cosmic Doctrine. Now, The Cosmic Doctrine is a very, very hard read. It is a metaphysical description of the workings of the universe, which Dion Fortune channeled. And the reason why it is so significant is because it's like almost no other work like it. It is non-persona. There are very, very few anthropomorphic personifications. This makes the book, to my way of thinking, far more convincing. Because it lacks these anthropomorphic personifications, and it's very, very profound, and so to some extent Gareth Knight's using that as a guideline. Now, Let me go and read Dion Fortune's characteristics of Malkuth here. And we get started. Malkuth, the kingdom, and spelled Mem, Lamed, Goth, Lao, and Tao. The magical image is a young woman crowned and throned. Situation on the tree is at the base of the pillar of equilibrium. The Yetzirik text, the 10th path, is called resplendent intelligence because it is exalted above every head and sits upon the throne of Binah. It illuminates the splendors of all the lights and causes an influence to emanate from the Prince of Countenances, the Angel of Kether. And that, of course, is Metatron. Titles given to Malkuth: the gate of death, the gate of shadow of death, the gate of tears, the gate of justice, the gate of prayer, the gate of the daughter of the mighty ones, the gate of the Garden of Eden, the inferior mother, Malka, the queen, Kala, the bride, the virgin. The god name is Adonai Melech or Adonai Haaretz. The archangel is Sandalphon. The choir of angels, the Ashim, the souls of fire. Yeah, that sounds like a djinn. And the mundane chakra is Chulim Yayasadath, the sphere of the elements. A spiritual experience is the vision of the holy guardian angel. The virtue is discrimination. The vice is avarice and inertia. The correspondence of the microcosm is the feet or the anus. And that is if you're into yoga, and that's important. Symbols, the altar of the double cube, and the equal arm cross, the magic circle, and the triangle of art. The tarot cards are the four tens, the ten of wands, oppression, the ten of cups, perfected success, the ten of swords, ruin, and the ten of pentacles, wealth. Yeah, oh, reminds me. Now the color in Atzilut is yellow. Bria is citron, olive, russet, and black. And yet Zira is citron, olive, russet, and black, like with gold. And Ashia is black, red, with yellow. Now, gives you an idea of what's there. But actually, what I want to point out here is that Malkuth is the sphere in which at least half of your magical operations can actually be classified as in Malkuth. And you can bring down, you know, like for instance, let's say when you set your triangle up to do an evocation, you put your mirror in it. You could do this in Malkuth, or you could do it in Yasod. But either one, you could. However, we prefer to do what we call the Galatia spirits. We prefer to do those in the sphere of Yasod, next sphere up. And the reason being that all Galatia spirits fell to the bottom of the astral, which is technically Yasod, and they're related to the moon, so we put them all up there. Now, let me point this out, though, that if you do a evocation using the same equipment and the mirror and everything else, if you do it in Malkuth, then you can do all of the so-called spirits of the earth sphere. Let me point something out here. The sacred magic of Amabel and the Maj, when you finish your holy guardian angel retreat and you are in touch with your holy guardian angel in Malkuth, you are then entitled to, according to the Abramelian tradition, you're entitled to complete control over all these spirits of the earth, 360 of them. Now, it just so happens that those 360 spirits of the earth sphere that we find in Franz Barden's practice of magical evocation are almost identical with the 360 spirits that Abramelin in the German version of Sacred Magic of Abramelin the Marsh said that you were entitled to. So what's going on here? Well, what's simply going on here is this. This means that you can evoke these spirits in Malkuth. You don't have to go up to Yasod. I still think it might be a good idea to, use your correct astrological sequence for it. But this would give you an idea. Now, what we do, we discovered that in doing invocation, in using the triangle, using the mirror, in Malkuth, we can do previous incarnations or ancestors. This is done all over the world, by the way. The dark mirror is used for bringing up your previous incarnations and or your ancestors. And we've done this. It's very successful. Works very well. Now, another thing that you want to think about is when you go for your Holy Guardian Angel, and you're doing your Holy Guardian Angel retreat. Now, your Holy Guardian Angel, it's kind of a three-part thing. I mean, it's part of it. There's one angel that you're born with, and one of those 360 that, not to be confused with the ones of the spirits of the earth sphere, there may be some relation, but your birth angel probably could be said to control one of these or something, if you want to do that. But your birth angel, you find in the Pauline art, and that is right on your ascendant. And then you have this other one, this planetary angel, which is connected to it. But that's right in the past. So you have that, plus the main Holy Guardian Angel, though, according to Hermes and Agrippa and the rest of them, the main Holy Guardian Angel stays with you all through your incarnations. And so consequently, that Holy Guardian Angel can bring up and help you bring up your previous incarnations. And this is all in Malkuth. We're talking about operations entirely in the sphere of Malkuth. They're pretty, I would say, rather important operations. Now, another thing, Basil Wilby, Gareth Knight, in his particular treatise on Malkuth, in his Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism, he was pointing out the relationship of the Eleusinian Mysteries to Malkuth. And, Basil knew Fred Adams rather well, so I think maybe he was, when he wrote that, he was thinking about Fred. And he went on about how the Eleusinian Mysteries are entirely in the sphere of Malkuth, because we're dealing with Persephone and Demeter, and he didn't mention Corey, but Persephone and Demeter primarily. And this is all in Earth, and it's also the Earth and Thonian subterranean deities, whatever. This is part of this. This pagan tradition is coming into Malkuth, and part of this, frankly. Part of what Basil is writing about in here, he almost gets Spherefarian when he's writing about the sphere of nature and how sacred it is, and then he goes on and tells us that really our religions that try to paint nature in a bad light are not only are they not Kabbalistic, but they are actually kind of twisted, according to Basil. Of course, Basil got older. I hope he. I don't know whether Basil's still alive. I think maybe he passed on a little while ago. But not if he's still alive. But Basil got, as did Dion Fortune, as he got older and all, he got more Christian and more Christian and more Christian. And then finally he told Fred one time, he said, Fred, how do you think you're going to really enjoy this heaven you're creating for yourself? Because Fred was imagining all of the wood nymphs running, tripping through the woods and all of this. And Basil was sort of thinking, you're really going to enjoy this paradise you're making for yourself. However, Dion Fortune and Basil both went through a long and delightful romance with nature, and so if they started getting a little more transcendental in their later years, we can forgive them for that. I even have lapses into transcendentalism myself occasionally, And that's usually when it's raining and I can't go outside and hike. Anyway, so Malkuth is the sphere in which it happens. This is the sphere of the physical sphere, the manifesting sphere, the sphere where things happen. This is, whereas the higher spheres, that as you go up, they're the spheres of visions and the spheres of inspiration and visions. But Malkuth is where it happens. Malkuth is where we do it and it works. Malkuth is the world we live in, and yet, as Basil points out, we live in this world, but how many of us actually do? How many of us actually go outside in the morning and look around and actually look at the nature surrounding us and appreciate it and try to understand it and try to even make the mistake, try to become one with it, because it is where we are. And if we have a purpose, it is certainly, if human beings have a purpose, and we think they do, then you're here to do the most important thing. And according to what Basil says, and I think he's right, is when you die, you got plenty of time to think about things and ruminate on what you did and what you should have done and what you didn't do and all of that. But you don't have a physical place to manifest it. So when you come back again, then you can do it again. So the Malkuth is incredibly important. And it's incredibly important, and it's incredibly magical. And frankly, the idea of trying to escape from it is not the purpose of Kabbalah, and it really never was. And yet, at the same time, we have to realize that Kabbalah and Hermetic philosophy, and all of the magic, Western magic, does try to ascend, at least send your consciousness up and bring the higher consciousness down, so that the transcendental experience is something that we strive for and that we achieve and that enriches us. But it should always be to enrich us here in our life, to bring these visions down and to get this knowledge and this wisdom to help us in this life. Because this life that we have, as the Buddhists tell us, you know, they continually tell us, this life is precious. You've been given a precious life here to live. And yet the same, so quite frankly, the Buddhists are fibbing when they tell you that they just want to dissolve into nothingness and find nirvana. They're fibbing. They really are fibbing, because they take so many bodhisattva vows. They've taken so many bodhisattva vows that they have committed themselves to more reincarnations than a Scientologist. I'm not going to go there. but what I'm trying to say is that on the one hand, if they tell you this life is precious, and then they say they want to get away from it, no, they don't. They want to have another precious life, and another precious life, and another precious life, and so do we. So for all of this business of wanting to escape the suffering and all of that, no, life is good. Life is good, and life is precious, and Malkuth is the place where we live it and where we do it. And so consequently, the magical, all of the magical attributes of Malkuth are tremendously important. Now, as far as the angels are concerned, Metatron is the angel of Kether, way up there in the top. And Sandalphon is the angel of the earth. Now, even Basil, and they were still calling Sandalphon male. We like to personify the angels, Gabriel and Uriel of the elements. They're female in our way of looking at it. And Saint Alphonse certainly is female, because the angel of the earth should certainly, we think, should certainly be personified as female, and the earth mother. Now, let me point out something, a few more things about Malkuth while we're at it, because there's a lot to cover. Let's consider Malkuth from a yoga, from the yoga point of view. Now, Malkuth is synonymous with Mumadhara in the classical Indian tantric system. And now, if you remember, in Mumadhara, that's down in the perineum, down in the rear end, and you sit on it. And they put the snake down there, or the kundalini. And by the way, the kundalini is female. You know, and the snake is down there wrapped around the lingam. And little red snake, and you know, your idea is in tantric yoga, you're going to wake up the snake and get it to charge up your backbone and open up all your chakras and give you a real buzz. And you know, we all have, I think most of us have opened our, raised our kundalini in one way or another. And, of course, the way we do it is sort of a Taoist method, just kind of a cheat. But we, in the West, we put the dragon down there, because they have a snake over in India. We have a dragon. And we've had a dragon for a long, long time. In fact, you can see it wrapped around the chakras in Gitchell's Renaissance drawing of the chakras. So we got the dragon down there in Malkuth. And the dragon's in the cave, and the dragon is asleep and on a pile of treasure, like dragons like to do. And we don't. Now, we this dragon's female, so she doesn't eat virgins. She might eat young, young boys. I don't know, but no, she did. She lies there around this treasure. And the idea that you need to do in yoga, and hermetic yoga, is wake up the dragon and send her up that backbone. Send her up to each one of those chakras above and open them up. And, of course, the seed letter in this case is for the cave of the dragon is Omega. And so when you go on up, you pinch your rear end together and sit with your back straight, and up you go. And if you really want to do it, you want to. Yeah, just sell you on doing this. I don't tell you how to sit with your back straight, and you can use the Egyptian or the what do they call them, the Taoist position, Chinese or Egyptian. That just means sitting in a straight back chair and sitting right on the edge of the chair with your feet flat on the ground and your spine straight, if you don't want to use an asana. And then put your tongue all the way back in the back of your mouth, as far as back as you can get it, until you get to that soft palate, and stick your tongue back there and push it up into the... Now, some people who can't do that have been known to actually cut that little thing in the back of the tongue, so they don't do that. Don't do this at home. No, but if you can, and most people can, if you can get your tongue way back up there in that soft palate, and look, be sure when you do this to look upward behind your closed eyelids. And then pinch your buttocks together as hard as you can. Think about that dragon down there waking up and shooting right up your spine all the way up to your tongue, to where your tongue is. Be sure you get your tongue back there, because you want to bring the dragon up. And you can feel it ting going on up. Anybody that has a big... huffy puffy kundalini experience from this. Take it easy when you start, because you could, you know. And up it goes. Now, it goes on up through the psychic centers, opening them up, and we start up, you know. Om gay be da re be kafta. Yeah, and we're up there, and then we're up the course, the physical universe is supposed to start. And we do the cube of space in our heads, and we get on down. Now, so the cave of the dragon is Malkuth and Sandalphon is our earth angel. I have a drawing of Sandalphon I did one time with all these various, her wings have all these prayers on them, and she's holding the globe of the earth, and she's crying, and she has the four elements personified in the folds of her gown. Kind of a nice thing, because the earth needs a lot of help these days. We need to preserve our beautiful, beautiful, beautiful planet. And that goes along, of course, with the Renaissance concept of the anima mundi, the female spirit of the earth. So I hope that this gives you a better picture of the sphere of Malkuth and its importance and its magical quality, because the world is a very magical place. And one of the things that you find out as you get into magic is you realize, when you really get into it, that magic is all around you. Magic is happening every day. Magic is in your relationships with other people and in your relationships with nature. And once you really get into magic, there are no coincidences. Everything is, everything in life is a metaphor, a magical metaphor. And this is the sphere where it is happening. So if you're a magician, you don't separate yourself from life. You don't escape from life. You live life, and you live it to the fullest, and you live it in the most awakened and perceptive and alert ways you possibly can. You be here now and enjoy every instant of it, because as the Buddha say, it's precious. And so this next week, if I can get through more of Timothy Willie's book on the Return of the Rebel Angel, which is very, very good, by the way, and I'm really, really enjoying it, but it's pretty long, and it's pretty heavy, and it's just a fun read, but it's really packed full of wonderful information. And yeah, maybe if I get enough of that done with everything else, we can have Maestro Timothy Willie back on and talk about that book, which I'm sure you'll all really enjoy. So we'll hope for that. And if we don't, well, we'll go to the 32nd path, and we will we'll start on up toward Yasun, give you the symbolism of the 32nd path. Yeah. So, in the meantime, good magic, and tune in next week, and we'll do it again.